hearing. Yesterday we ended with the, some of the areas that actually raised, and we did take note together of a number of those submissions, and Philip Morris in particular has made certain views in terms of his own suggestions yesterday, and I think Philip Morris's view was also raised a number of issues they wanted us to look into, from the definitions and other things. Not sure, publicity. He raised also other views in terms of advertising. In fact, he was advocating that we completely ban. I think that was the point also raised by Advocate Lambert. By the way, other areas that also were raised by other submissions, Philip Morris, Cancer Association, or basic certain things. So we suggest, firstly, if you can get a copy of Philip, what? Not Philip Morris, what? Advocate Lambert, Yoga. When can you get a copy?
Chairperson, good morning. The copies should be being printed now.
Madam Member, would you allow me to open the discussion in the new one? Thank you very much. Let's open the discussion. And then if there are any issues arising, we still have other processes. The document is being printed, will be here in a short while. Short while means anything. Honorable Waters.
I agree with the gist of what you said yesterday, but I do have a few concerns. I mean, you seem to attack the tobacco industry for wanting to make a profit, but every business is in to make a profit. That's why they exist, irrespective of what product they may be selling. And that's it may be unfortunate from your perspective, but tobacco companies are there to make a profit. And like any other company, they will identify certain segments of the population which they will focus on. And obviously, and I'm not talking about children, I'm talking about adults now, to try and get them to smoke. The other issue you raised was the issue around the black diamond. And you raised it in a way that, came across as you thought it was a geography term. But I've seen that term in many newspapers, the black diamond. It's a terminology for the up-and-coming black middle class. So I don't know, you know, maybe you have a different opinion, but I think it's just a normal term that's used, particularly in the economic sphere. I may be wrong, and maybe you can correct me on that, but I don't think there was anything untoward in that. You raised the issue about 18-year-olds, saying that one day they're 17 years old and 364 days, and 2 days later they're 18 years and 1 year, 1 day, sorry, and they can make, you know, decisions whereby they may not be mature enough to do so. But, I mean, you weren't quite clear as to what you're proposing. You raised the issue, but you didn't come up with a solution. So I just want to know, what are you suggesting? Because there has to be a cut-off point, you know, there's got to be a date by which children become adults and can make decisions for themselves. And I agree with you. Some 18-year-olds are very immature, but some 17-year-olds are very mature. So it's a give and take. And then you haven't raised, and neither have any of the other groups, raised the issue of licensing for the tobacco industry. I'd just like to get your thoughts on that. What do you think, in order to manufacture or import or sell tobacco products, you should have a license? And why wasn't that raised in your presentation? And then, as far as the advertising is concerned, I hear what you're saying about a complete ban of advertising, given the harmfulness of tobacco products, but would that not be going against the Competition Act? And do you have a problem with the suggestion from Philip Morris, thank you, Chair, where they are suggesting that each company has one advertisement at a point of sale, you know, where tobacco products are sold. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. In any way, Honorable Mike has already covered me on this concept of black diamonds, because to me it was sort of confusing yesterday, not being clarified as to why it has been put into that presentation. But I still reiterate the fact that yesterday we've been undermined. One is around the presentation document. As we are sitting here right now, we don't have those a presentation document, of which creates a very serious problem to members of parliament to relate to what has been presented to us yesterday. And second to that, Chair, along an issue of the undermining factors, is that quotation of Kenya. It has been raised in that quotation. It's just that I cannot actually quote it as it was yesterday, but I will just try to paraphrase it. The manner in which our Kenyan brothers MPs have been presented, it is as if we don't actually have purple African MPs in an African continent. Therefore, I hope Advocate Lambert had a choice of picking up that quotation. And she picked up that quotation with a purpose. Now, I just want to know as to whether she's been comparing those Kenyan MPs to us here in South Africa, Chair. And lastly, Chair, what I want to raise is an issue around the Constitution and vis-a-vis trade. I should think our constitution is very clear, granting even the industry the right to operate in this country. Now, if you look critically into what has been presented yesterday, it's a sort of an element with a properties. Because critically, if you have to present such a presentation document to us, it says, what are the exact properties of each element? And in this case, an element is the industry, tobacco industry companies. And it has got a special property. The special property within this tobacco industry is consultation. Now, I just want to know, because we've been sitting here from time to time and just to check with the department, are you truly consulting with the industry? I'm still asking this question today, Chair, because, Chair, if all of us, legislators and presenters, non-smokers and smokers, can walk circumspectly, Chair, I think we are going to actually achieve what is this country intending to achieve at the end. We need not to undo the gains that we have generated in the past decade. With, for instance, some of reckless presentations in inverted commas, Chairperson. I will end up there for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. By the way, it's my birthday today. Thank you, Chairperson. Indeed, the presentation by Advocate Patricia yesterday was quite a marathon. And to me, it sounded like we are being lectured to. I think in the past, as far as I'm concerned, this has been passing laws, and we did that diligently. And I don't know, maybe it's my thinking, but I think there is something that says to me, there's a problem now, this time, with this particular bill. But that needs to be ironed out later on. My question will be directed to you, Advocate Patricia, as a champion of the drafting of this bill. The advertising, the electronic advertising, the SMS, the internet, whatever you may call it, as long as it's electronic, I would like to know, how are you going to monitor this, in particular, for our children not to be able to be enticed into smoking by those kinds of advertisements? I will ask the second question later on through you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Advocate Lambert.
Do you wish me to start, Chairperson?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I think you will recall yesterday that I began my presentation saying that the tobacco industry is like every other industry. It exists to make a profit. There's no questioning that. The difficulty is the product of which this profit is made. Because every single cent of profit that is made off this product is doing damage to an individual's body. Moreover, the product is so addictive, so very addictive, that it makes it difficult for people to quit. The earlier people begin smoking, the more difficult it is to quit. You might be surprised to hear that there are documents in the archives released by the tobacco industry where young people are described as replacement smokers. That's a quotation. Young people are regarded by the industry as replacement smokers. And of course, if you analyze this according to a business model, it's absolutely clear. Most people who die of tobacco-related diseases die in their middle age. And the moment somebody dies, the industry stops making a profit off them. So they do need to look for replacement smokers so that they continue to generate a profit. And it is exactly that that this legislation is dedicated towards curbing, because the only way that you get people to smoke is to find ways of advertising your product. And that's why both the direct and the indirect advertising are so important. One of the most blatant forms of advertising over which we can do nothing is children seeing adults smoke. And that's why we have to make huge efforts through education, through public awareness programs, to denormalize this habit that is smoking. It is not a right to smoke, it is an addictive habit. And that's what we're trying to do, to make sure that young people, who are our future, see fewer and fewer and fewer people smoking, so that they don't get the idea that it is okay to smoke, because it isn't, because it hurts the human body. It causes disease and death, and most of that disease and death is catered for by the public health system, which has to spend hundreds of thousands of rand helping people to recover or seeing to them as they die of emphysema, pulmonary disabilities, and so on. Regarding the comment on the black diamond, I'm fully aware that this is used to describe upwardly mobile black people, but then you have to ask yourself the question, how does the industry see the extra money in the pockets of upwardly mobile black people. It sees it as its profit margin. It sees it as a place to market its product. If the industry exists to make a profit, which you acknowledge the industry exists to make a profit, then every single human being out there is only a vehicle towards that profit. In other words, if the industry can get us to smoke, it continues to make a profit. There's no rocket science to tobacco control. There really isn't. There's just the fact, on the one hand, that the industry exists to make a profit, and on the other hand, that the vehicle for making that profit is a product that causes disease and death. The questions around 18 years are always tricky. We pick a cutoff date. Regarding psychological maturity and the ability to make conscious decisions about smoking, if the packs of cigarettes in South Africa, and we hope that they soon will, have pictures on them that show mouths eaten away by cancer, that show people who can only talk with the aid of a speaking tube, which show, and this is one of the ones that I have seen, erectile dysfunction in men is exacerbated as a result of smoking. When young people see that on the packages of cigarettes, then I think they will feel differently about smoking. Until the time that we get pictorial warnings on our packs of cigarettes, it is harder and harder to make the point to young people that we would prefer it if they didn't smoke. So yes, 18 years is a cutoff point, but it is quite arbitrary. The point is not that the age is arbitrary. We're delighted that the age is being lifted from 16 to 18. This is a really good thing. But even so, the protection cannot stop there. So in addition to raising the age to 18, we need to ban all forms of advertising, promotion, and sponsorship, so that smoking does not look like normal behavior. If you saw somebody drinking cyanide, you wouldn't consider it normal behavior. Smoking, however, is considered normal behavior, and that's because society has normalized it through tobacco product advertising over many, many decades. We are seeking to undo some of that and make sure that children don't start smoking. You know, one of the difficulties with pegging an age at 18 is the fact that young people who begin to smoke, that, let's say, 18 to 25, 26-year-old group. The difficulty is that those young people are very often the role models for the people who are just below 18. So when the tobacco industry says everybody above 18 has the right to make a choice, indeed this is probably true, but those of us who are involved in public health have to think further than that individual choice and try to make sure that young people between the ages of 18 and 26, when they are role models for people below the age of 18, don't smoke. There is nothing good to be said for the product. With regard to licensing, I didn't bring it up in my presentation yesterday because I wanted to focus on advertising. I'm sure that licensing will be dealt with in other capacities. If you have specific questions on that, I would be more than prepared to answer them for you, but not in this particular context, because that's not something that I have prepared my mind on for this. So if you give me a little time to think about it, I'm more than happy to answer you. But those would be my personal thoughts and not the thoughts of the Department of Education that is sponsoring this legislation. Is a complete ban going against the Competitions Act? Well, no, it isn't. We've checked the bill for constitutionality. So we've had several legal opinions on the constitutionality of the Act. So no, I don't think it goes against the Competitions Act. The important thing to know here is that in terms of our Constitution in Section 32, yes, we do allow trade, but we also restrict trade on very many different products. Most of those products upon which we restrict the trade are dangerous products. And the idea here is that tobacco is a dangerous product. The industry will call it risky. The industry will tell you that there are some risks involved. Danger is the word that we prefer, dangerous and lethal. Regarding Philip Morris International's idea that there should be one ad at the point of sale, we wish to ban advertising. So no ads at the point of sale. The ideal would be a sign that says cigarettes are for sale here. And the person can go to the counter and ask for the cigarettes of his or her choice. This is empowering legislation. The specifics of that, of the points of sale, will be drafted by the department in regulation. But that there should be any advertisements of tobacco products at all, my personal answer to that would be no. And that's what's reflected in the current act. In the current bill before you, not yet an act. I am deeply sorry to both of the members who have asked questions for me, the honourable members who have asked questions for me, that seem to believe that in some way I am undermining the parliamentary process in South Africa. If that is the impression that I have given you, I can only apologise most sincerely. Far from undermining the parliamentary process in South Africa, I am attempting to strengthen the parliamentary process in South Africa, to support the parliamentary process in South Africa, by giving a group of very busy members of parliament a view on how we see the advertising issue and how we see the tobacco industry, what it does, how it behaves, how it conducts itself, and above all, what the nature of its product is. So if in doing so, I appear to have undermined you or have given you the impression that I have undermined you, I apologize for that sincerely. As you may well remember, I worked for 7 years as the legal advisor to the Health Ministry in South Africa, working on a variety of legislation, including legislation to do pharmaceutical products. So my intention in coming to these hearings is only to support the parliamentary process and to provide the parliamentarians, as invited by this Health Portfolio Committee, with as much information as I am able to do. The only reason that I used the example from Kenya is because it's a factual one. And if the Honourable Minister is interested in that, I would be able to pull down the dates, the process of legislation, the places where the legislation was stopped and how it was stopped. I don't think that the fact that this happens occasionally in parliaments, not only in Africa, but all over the world. One of the most famous examples comes from Mexico, where the Mexican government ratified the FCTC and then went into an arrangement with the tobacco industry to voluntarily regulate the products. Now, when you allow the industry to voluntarily regulate its products and the way it behaves, it's like being a player and a referee in a soccer match. It's not up to the industry to decide how and when their products should be regulated. That is the function of governments. That is the function of the public health authorities. And that is exactly why the South African public health authorities have placed this bill before the Honourable Parliamentarian. And I did not intend to compare the two. These are two completely different examples. I picked an African example because Africa is one of the countries where the tobacco epidemic is going to play itself out in a devastating way if we don't act in each and every country to try to control tobacco marketing, tobacco advertising, smoking in public places, the denormalization of the smoking habit, and so on. Have we truly been consulting? Honourable members, from 2003 until 2006, and I think I have those dates accurately, I was still working as a legal advisor to the Ministry of Health. In my capacity as a legal advisor to the Ministry for Health, I worked with colleagues in the department, many of whom are still here, on drafting this bill. Several consultations were held with the tobacco industry. Although the minister never met personally with the tobacco industry, and there is a reason for that, the minister meets personally with institutions that are promoting health, not institutions and organizations and committees that are selling a product that makes people unhealthy. But I was instructed as the minister's special advisor to meet with the industry on a regular basis, which I did. And I can vouch for the fact that there have been many consultations with members of the Department of Health on this legislation and other aspects of tobacco control. I know that I met with them at least once a year and several more times while this bill was being drafted. Now, that said, you will hear from the tobacco industry over and over and over again that we do not consult with them. And I use we very generally, by the meaning the Department of Health, and when I was there with it, myself as well. Not only is this not true, but I think when you dig to the heart of the matter, if we don't agree with everything they say we do not consult with them. Getting a yes answer from the Department of Health is not the only way of judging whether you consult with them. Spending a few hours in the room with them, debating tobacco control, answering their questions, and then, and this is the thing that seems to have been missed in all of this, not only did we consult with the Department of Health, but we altered the legislation where we felt that it needed to be altered. But the deciding element here is not whether the tobacco industry agrees with this legislation or not. The deciding element is who acts for public health and who acts for corporate profit. The tobacco industry acts for corporate profit. The Department of Health acts for public health. And since this is a public health bill, it is up to the Department of Health to decide which aspects of the bill it wishes to promote and which it doesn't. I think... I have neglected one question, I think. And that is the electronic media. The electronic media is obviously a growing market. It's something that is evolving even as we speak. Having admitted my age to you yesterday, I don't mind telling you that a lot of it baffles me. But fortunately, I don't have to be an expert on this. The Department of Health will consult with experts and has already done so. I know, for example, that with regard to internet sales, the point of delivery of that sale is in South Africa. So although the internet is hard to pin down, the point of delivery for a sold product, if that is here in South Africa, then South African law applies. With regard to SMSs, the Chinese use technology to block both the internet and the message system for, what are these things called? Mobile phones, for the short messaging system for mobile phones. So obviously the technology also exists that can be put to use for tobacco control so that young people are not simply the recipients of marketing for a deadly product. If there are any other questions that I haven't answered, Chair, I apologize and will pick them up as fast as I can take notes.
Yeah, always, last time you were very good and concise in answering questions. These days, I don't know what's happening. It takes a lot of time yesterday and today, and time is not our friend, unfortunately. And we want to ensure that we must finish today, you know. But we must finish without disadvantaging anyone when tomorrow we are blamed for not having given them time. Honorable Mashiko.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to find out from Advocate what opinion is because the research and the economist from UCT and Professor Mbeu mentioned that this is the implementation of the tobacco amendment bill, the smoking has gone down, and somehow it doesn't mention that, and I didn't get the impression from her of what she thinks about it. And another one is in advertising, whether advertising in her opinion has an effect in encouraging illicit drugs. And I think even she mentioned that pictorial advertising in showing the dangers of drugs can only be done by showing actual people being just now, how they were affected by cancer. And I just want to know what she thought of the picture, because there are some pictures that can draw people's attention to some to act up on what they see. We saw the cowboy dying, being told that, boy, this is cancer. And he was dead. And it went to secondhand smoking. And the horse was dead. I wonder what you thought about it. Because that is one way that can even have influence. I don't smoke. I don't like smoking. My family doesn't smoke. But I'm just talking of what you think about such things and what impression it can have on the public in the form of saying cancer is dangerous against taking a real person who has been affected and died on the picture. I know we are advocating for pictorial images. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chair. I would not be ejected from Parliament if I do it now. Thank you, Chair. I just want to express my appreciation for your presentation yesterday, Advocate Lambert. I must say, it did feel like sitting in a lecturing class, but the information that you conveyed to us was very powerful, I must say, definitely. I just want to ask you with regard to your views on trade-only publications. The industry would obviously argue that they must communicate with their business partners, retailers, etc., to express or talk about new products, etc. I would also argue that such publication would not be circulated or available for the wider public. You have presented us with a picture yesterday of such a publication, and you have raised your concern with the advertising that actually appears in it. Now, clearly, I would want you to express your view around that. Secondly, you also indicated yesterday that Mixit somehow originated within the tobacco or from the tobacco industry. Now, please elaborate on it, because clearly the people that engage in Mixit are young people, very, very young. The vast majority below the age of 18. And this bill is intended to prevent children, as we describe in this, or define in this country as those below the age of 18, to somehow be coerced or lead into the tobacco world. Now, clearly, if you can just elaborate a little bit more on that, it will be very appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I think the issue of internet the internet and SMSing. I mean, the advocate mentioned that in China they have a technology to prevent SMSs and people going on the internet. But, I mean, that's a blanket prevention of SMSs because of the oppressive regime of China. You know, there's no freedom of speech. People aren't allowed to be on the internet and look up what, you know, what's happening in the world. So, I mean, that's two different things. I mean, preventing certain SMSs to do with tobacco, I mean, I think it would be virtually impossible to put a block on that. No, and I stand corrected. If anyone is an expert here, they can maybe shed some light. But certainly, I'd hate to go the route of China, you know, as far as freedom of speech is concerned and human rights are concerned. Thanks.
I just want to find out from the advocate, just to share with us her wisdom as far as consultation is concerned. She says the consultation was done while she was the department law advisor. Now, I want to know, since this bill was separated from the initial one, was there no need for any consultation on what we are doing today?
Thank you once more, Chair President. Chair, one has been examining the presentation and what the department has actually told us in their briefing about this bill. But when you look critically into that examination, it says to one that there are permanent differences. I don't know as to whether with other industries or what. Or it's because this is a tobacco industry. I don't speak for them anyway. We are 13 at home. We've got 52 children of ours, 13. None of them are smoking unless we don't see them. Now, I just want to know as to whether there's a permanent differences which have been raised by Madumisi, by Honorable Madumisi, will never have a profound repercussion, especially for all of us, like initially I said, for legislators, for Philip Morris, for the department, and everybody. And what has been said yesterday, again, it was an issue on directly advertisement around the world, because the presentation, again, was full of international examples. I just want to know as to whether the industry, in particular the tobacco industry, is not complying in the country, and how many incidents, for instance, we've been seeing a racing car, a Marlboro picture, and what if you. I just want to know as to how many incidents has occurred within the country. And lastly, it is a question on social responsibilities, which the presentation has covered. You know, I come from Northwest, and it is more rural, actually. And there are lots and lots of farms in that province. Right now, I'm sitting with a situation whereby in Groondal, there is no single clinic for the population, and the population around Groondal is close to 5,000. And people from Groondal have to travel to Rustenburg city for 7 kilometers to go and access their health in that in Rustenburg city. I just want to know, as a legislator, if I approach business and business says to me, we can do this for you because I'll have to provide services. It's part of my work. I'll have to provide services for the people of Groondal in this case. Can I not really approach the business, for instance, the tobacco industry, and say and tell them, what is the plight of these people in that area? Will it really say people cannot access the health in a building which has been built by a tobacco industry, in essence? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for being liberal. I was not here yesterday. But Honorable Waters has covered a question I wanted to ask about China. But I would like to find out from you, Prof, what's your take on advertising on tobacco, in particular for the youth and pregnant women, especially in the protection of the unborn babies. We've got a lot of pregnant mothers who are youth, who are school-going age, who are heavy smokers. What's your take on that one? Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. The first question, as I recall, was that the Honourable Member wanted my comment on smoking having gone down as a result of the legislation that South Africa has already passed. That is certainly true, and I think that that proves that our legislation so far has been successful. The reason that there is another bill before the Honourable Members is because there are loopholes in that legislation that have allowed, in particular, advertising. I can give you a concrete example of this, ma'am, and that is that when the original legislation went through, the addictive tobacco product snus was not yet available in South Africa. This has now been launched by the tobacco industry through leaflets which are disguised as how to use this product, but in fact amount to advertisements. So it's, and people can get addicted to snus in exactly the same way that they can get addicted to cigarettes, because the basic constituent of the product is nicotine. So although we've managed to bring our smoking down rates down, and hopefully with good, strong legislation, they will drop even further, every drop in the smoking rates means that the population overall is that much healthier. But we also want to stop people from taking up other nicotine habits that are as addictive. So, you know, the proof around the world is that those countries that have acted strongly to control the tobacco industry and the marketing of tobacco products and the use of tobacco products, in every single country, smoking rates are dropping. And that would be an impetus for really good, strong legislation with the loopholes closed. The pictures for... the pictures that depict the results of the use of tobacco products, whether they be diseased lungs, diseased gums, laryngectomies, babies that are born underweight as a result of smoking, or children coughing and asthma being exacerbated by being in the presence of smokers, all of those pictures have proved to be enormously successful, and there is now solid science on this. There is evidence to prove that that has been successful. We are very fortunate in South Africa in that there are many countries around the world that have already taken these pictures to various, I forget for the moment, ma'am, what the groups are called. I think they're called focus groups, but the advertising industry uses them as well. They take the pictures to these groups, and then they say, would this do the following things for you? So in this case, it would this put you off smoking? And a number of those pictures are freely available for use around the world now that have been tested and have been found to be effective. With regard to the trade publications, I really do regret that I wasn't able to show you the picture that I found yesterday morning in the trade publication. But we may be, you know, with the wonders of scanning and computers and so on, we may well, if the members are interested in seeing it, I think it will shock you. We could always arrange for that to be done. And if you flip through... through the trade publication, as I did yesterday morning, but very briefly, there are many ways of communicating with the people that you want to sell your cigarettes. So if you write to them about your product, describe your product to them, focus on the product that you wish them to try to sell for you. That's one thing. Showing a woman naked except for a pair of lace knickers or underpants, I don't think says anything at all about the product. What it does say is something extremely derogatory about women. But then, as a feminist, that is something that would offend me very deeply. I'm not saying that it would offend everybody. But I am clear-headed enough to know that this is not saying anything about the product. So what we are saying is that that even the trade publications, we're not preventing the industry from communicating with the people who will sell its products. It's how they communicate. And you know, I've seen trade publications. As a member of the public, I have seen trade publications lying around in shops. And I'm sure that the shopkeeper's children see those trade publications too, whether they see their father or mother at work or whether those trade publications are brought home. There is no way of guaranteeing that those kinds of pictures of naked women in lace underwear don't also find their way into the hands of children. We can't control that. What we can do is regulate how the industry communicates with its people so that you don't find that kind of offensive advertising. The Mixit, as you may be aware, Honourable Member, I don't live in South Africa anymore and won't for the next year or so. So I'm not completely aware of exactly what is on Mixit. But from what I know of the industry, the industry will use everything that it can to push its products in the same way that any other industry would. The tobacco industry is not a victim. You have only to look at the amount of profit that internationally the industry makes to know that these are not victims. These are corporate people who make enormous amounts of money out of sickness and death. So I would suspect that they would use every avenue that they could to advertise these products. Mixit would be another of them. But the point was made yesterday, and this answers your question around the internet. I am a human rights activist first and foremost, and I regard protection from cigarette advertising and cigarette smokes as very much as a human rights issue. I would not be advocating that we adopt anything like the Chinese versions of control on freedom of speech. Far from it. What I am, however, advocating is that if this law is passed, the onus falls on the industry to know that it may not use the internet to advertise. It may not use mobile phones to advertise. If then a complaint is made, if the industry is found to advertise, and the fine is sufficient to deter that, something in the millions of rands would be applicable for this particular industry. If the fine is sufficient to deter that, then we place the onus on the industry to make sure that it does not use that means of advertising for fear of being prosecuted in the courts. But in order to go through with those prosecutions, the fines have got to be meaningful and the law must be there in the first place. There was a question asked by the Honourable Madumiso, I think, around consultation while I was at the Ministry of Health and the separation of the bill. The separation of the bill was a technical act, but the contents of the bill remained the same, save for a few changes that were made at the suggestion of the industry and other stakeholders, particularly stakeholders that are concerned with human health, that the department consulted with. So the department consults regularly with the medical associations, the cancer associations, the Medical Research Council, and so on. And they also gave feedback into the original drafts of the bill. The substance of the bill did not change when it was split into two pieces. So to run a separate round of consultations on what is substantively the same issue. I can't answer for the department because I wasn't there, but it would seem to me that that would not have been a very wise use of the department's time, since the industries and other stakeholders, health-related stakeholders, had expressed their opinions already on the draft legislation. How many incidents have occurred in South Africa where the current advertising laws have been broken by the industry? That was your question, ma'am, was it not? I know of a number of cases that have gone to the Advertising Standards Authority. Those were brought by the National Council Against Smoking. So since they are giving a presentation later in the afternoon, they would probably be in a position to give you more detail. But if you ask me if, in general, the industry has broken the current tobacco control legislation, yes, they have. They have done so at the point of sale. They have done so by reading the law in a very particular way to allow them to get away with advertising on change mats. And things that we just didn't think about when this law was originally drafted. I went into a shop yesterday evening on my way home from Parliament, and there is, around where I paid for my merchandise, to start with, there is a huge change mat on the till which has tobacco products on it. That is at the eye level of every single child. In some shops right here in Cape Town, tobacco products until very recently with staff. Do you wish me not to give
you
examples,
really
chair?
Maybe when you respond, just in the interest of other people to really to make submissions, a bit of a very concise and directed response. And I think it will really help us, because there may have been instances in what you say where the chair will make them follow up. But I'm so much limited. But at the end of the day, we want to get wiser. You know? That's the portfolio COVID in how best to improve the legislation. Sometimes I'm not getting wiser. I'm not, maybe it's me sitting here. I'm being told the obvious what I know. But there are certain clauses and issues that I hear that must make me and the health members of this committee wiser. What to take out, what to improve, and what to strengthen. I'm not being made wiser. That's the frustration that I have sitting here. I'm being given the information, and I sit here, I've heard it before.
I'm sorry, Chairperson, I was directed by you to answer the question, so that was what I was attempting to do.
That's why I'm saying that. I'm sure you should have the skill of knowing this. I can respond in it in a second. This, I'll clap it, other question and respond in it in 20 seconds. I think that's a skill. That's a skill that we should really try to develop ourselves in.
The answer then is...
Ultimately, I really want to plead, not just to you, to other people. Give me information that assists me to understand what I'm doing here. I really want to plead with that. We must finish this process and be wiser, so that when next week we process this bill, we take on board concrete issues, what has been said, then there's a clause here that says about this. This is what so and so say, this is what so and so say against this, what so and so, and then we mitigate ourselves, and then we say, this will be what we put to ourselves and distill it ourselves. Here. That's what really I want.
Shall I proceed? Has the law been broken? Yes, the law has very definitely been broken, and that is why the department has looked at the loopholes and attempted to close them. Regarding the question of Kroondal in the rural northwest province, could you approach a business? In terms of this legislation as it stands, you certainly can approach the tobacco industry to build a clinic. However ironic that might be, that I will leave that to every honourable member's own decision. You can certainly approach the industry to build a clinic. The only thing is that the clinic would have to be built anonymously because any other form would be a form of advertising. And then the last question from the Honourable Ngubel, yes, we do have to do everything that we can to protect young women in particular from smoking. And we believe that by denormalizing smoking as a habit and by banning all forms of advertising, that is one of the ways that we would be able to protect young mothers and also to educate them around the dangers of smoking while they are having, particularly while they are pregnant. A lot of that relies on public education, but it also relies on a complete and total ban of all forms of direct and indirect advertising.
Thank you very much. I'm disadvantaged. I was going to make a number of follow-up, both from what you said, as well as quotations you made from the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, and what is entailed in this bill. I can't do it now. I'm just limited by time. I really want to plead to all of us to make submissions. Put your views on what is here in front of us. Tobacco is harmful. We know. Tick. Don't say it. Tobacco harms children, we know. Tick, don't say it. The bill is here telling us what we should do or not do. Tell me here about what the bill is saying. Not the obvious. Please, I really want to plead. Otherwise, we're not going to move forward. The bill is instructing us a number of issues that I came out here. And this is not the first time we have been dealing with this bill, I think, as this portfolio committee, from its genesis to where we are now. And this is what the definition of advertising says, what is what the brand element says, what it says about what to advertise, physical establishment, all those things that I tell me, this is what it says here. All other things we know by now, and I'm sure any member of this portfolio committee, I mean, last time we even had a practical experience, I think, of a person who has been a direct victim who was using a machine to talk, was presented to us. We know those harms. No one here, in the, maybe from outside the committee, yes, but from this portfolio committee, no one doesn't know the harmfulness of tobacco. In fact, in our last submission, industry and anti-tobacco lobby, public in general, all agreed that tobacco is harmful product. All of them. There's no party from the industry will come here and say the tobacco industry is not harmful. We'll actually not listen to that. The issue at hand is how to ensure that we use this legislation that we have been piloting over time to protect the public from the harmfulness of tobacco, and therefore from all other things that are there, recognizing as well, and I think this is what we said last year when we were dealing with this particular section 75 of the bill, that the industry is legal. In the way we deal with it, let's recognize that fact. It's there in South Africa. It's not an illicit industry. It's there. So we approach whatever we do from that particular perspective. The legal industry, not the industry that is dealing with DACA. It's dealing with a legal trade that is actually understood, that pays taxes to this government. The fact is, this industry has got certain adverse consequences to the well-being of a society and to the health system of our country. And this is what we seek to address here. Please, members, I think I really want to plead with this particular issue. And in that way, and I'm certain that we'll make progress. You'll allow us, so that even me as a chair, sometimes I'm there to guide you. You are saying all the things, but this clause is saying this. What you think about this clause here, in what it is saying? I've not had that time, because my time is being consumed by other things. I really want to plead. Advising the people to make that
have in mind all those things, you know, and just before the camera presenters are reading. But when things arise, we must raise questions and agree that this is not our function. Mass Mart Holdings Limited, J. Curry. No, she has taken your place there now. And the legal department of the Department of Health, and I think we have made a request to look at the legalities of some of the issues that have been raised on advertising. And at some point, that particular submission must come to me and must be presented.
I'm Brian Garoni for Mass Mart Holdings. Chairperson, honourable members of the committee, we're very grateful that you're providing us with this opportunity to make a presentation to you. I'm a humble retailer, so I'll be brief. Mass Mart Holdings is a retail and wholesale business and the owner of well-known stores such as Macro, Game, Dion Wired, Jumbo, Cash and Carry. Our group turnover for the period ending June 2007 was around 34.8 billion rand. Approximately 4.6% of that turnover is attributable to tobacco products. The remainder of the turnover is attributable to food products, building materials products, and general merchandise, including high-tech products. We have noted in the bill that Section 3.2 of the Principal Act, when read together with Section 7.3, provides for a fine of up to 1 million rand for a retailer that makes any financial contribution to any person in respect of any organized activity that is to take place or is taking place in whole or in part in the Republic. The implementation of the proposed sections, and I'd like to emphasize this is based on our interpretation and is contradictory to an earlier interpretation that we heard, would prevent MassMart from continuing its corporate social investment program, which involves donating 1% of profit after tax per annum to the poorest of the poor South Africans. This money is invested primarily in educational initiatives and particularly in school feeding schemes in communities in which food security is a major priority. Existing beneficiaries to whom MassMart has already made long-term commitments include the African Children's Feeding Scheme and the Peninsula Feeding Scheme. Furthermore, based on our interpretation of the bill, this section would lead to MassMart having to discontinue its Umsumbumbu Youth Enterprise Development Fund as well as the MassMart WDB Rural Women's Development Fund. We would therefore like to suggest to the committee that you reevaluate Section 7.3 with perhaps a view to including a participative sales mix measurement that excludes retailers and wholesalers who have a tobacco sales mix of less than 10% of the entire merchandise mix. We trust that this suggestion will be given due consideration by the committee, and I'd like once again to thank you for allowing us to make this submission.
Chair, if I could just maybe make one correction. Grammar rebuttal from SMART. Section 3.3 rather than 7.3 to include the statement of tobacco sales not exceeding 10%. I think my colleague mentioned section 7.2, which is actually penalties and offences. Section 3.2, sorry, 3.2.
Quite concise. Thank you very much, Mass Mart. I think you've done exactly what we wanted. You've directed us to the issues that you want us to look into. I'm just trying to look. We are now dealing with B7208. You've got that copy, no? B7208. That's the legislation we're in now. Marat, you've got a copy? Not Mark?
Copy of the bill.
Where do you want to refer us then?
What are you looking for, a copy of, Chair? Let's... We have a copy of that, Joe. Chair, the subsection to which we refer is contained on page 4, and it If you read point A, you will see that it says at 2.A, no manufacturer, importer, distributor, or retailer of tobacco products shall organize or promote any organized activity that is to take place in whole or in part in the Republic. Make any financial contribution to any organized activity. And it is that that we're interpreting to be that we would be unable to make contributions from a CFI perspective. Section C is obviously also covers a similar issue. So that's page 4, lines 5 to 20. That's right, Chair.
Chair, can I beg your indulgence?
I'm here. If you allow me, can I beg your indulgence?
Chair, I'm not sure because the section that is being referred to is not being amended. It's been like that, section 2.5.2.15, except for the last part which doesn't refer to any retailer. So I'm just trying to check what the implications of, because there should be an implication of an amendment to a principal act, but the principal act is not being amended in terms of the section that is being referred to. So it would be a suggestion that it should be amended. That's what I'm trying to check. So if the proposal that is being presented is that part which already exists and they've been doing it in the existence of that part should now be amended. That's the implication.
I would think the areas underlined indicate amendments, and it's being referred to as this, and that's what is being raised by Mass. But
that's right.
You want us to read the whole thing in its entirety, but we're being focused as an amendment in front of us, underlined.
It just doesn't refer to retailers.
It does. Let's read. No manufacturer, importer, distributor, or retailer, and then we read the whole thing, and then it says a retailer, then that's an amendment. That was a manufacturer, importer of a tobacco product.
Yes, and that's the one that's being amended.
Shall not make any manufacturer capable contribution for unless that is made anonymous.
And that part doesn't refer to a retailer.
That's what we as a committee now must look at.
Yes.
To understand that there's no ambiguity in what Mass is raising.
Yeah, now that's what I was asking, sir, whether they are suggesting an amendment to that.
This is an amendment now that is made here. But I want to satisfy with the committee that Mass reading doesn't indicate any ambiguity. That's our function. Thank you very much, member.
Sir, I was actually going to ask the very same question that you are raising right now to MassMart as to whether there are any conflicts, because one cannot pick up anything wrong in that. Therefore, I just wanted to know, or I just wanted them to clarify us further on that, because we are dealing with the amendments right now. But anyway, you have covered my point.
MassMart or any other retailer for that matter wanted to give wanted to organize an activity, it has to include the tobacco product. So they like to organize an activity as long as it excludes the tobacco product. So just want to get clarity on that. And secondly, the anonymous donation that we raised this before, it's not against the FICA rules that you give money anonymously. I just need clarity on that. I understand where the department's coming from as far as, you know, keeping donations anonymous and not getting credit for building schools, whatever the case may be, whatever charity. But I just want to know, are we not transgressing the FICA rules in that regard? Thank you.
So the question raised, earlier, I think even in our last submissions we had, the very same question with regards to the FICA rules, with regards to the declaration in terms of tax issues around the donation tax is another thing. That's exactly the issue that we have to raise. We, committee members, that's our power to do. No other person is going to tell us. It's we are legislating here. Department? Want to comment? But I really want to advise members. No one is going to tell us anything. It's us to say yes or no and we agree.
No, thank you very much, Chair. We would actually give more evidence on Tuesday as we are asked to follow up on these matters. But anonymous donations, even within the FICA rules, are still allowed because the FICA rules are declarations to a specific group of people and not in public. So you can still make an anonymous donation without necessarily breaking the FICA rules.
Can I respond on MassMart's behalf, Chair? In terms of our sustainability reporting and our compliance with the Global Reporting Initiative guidelines, we're obliged to report all donations that we make. And if you were to look at our annual report and look at the sustainability report section, you will see that there's detail and also reference to our website where we describe exactly the causes that we support. So we are unable, in terms of our internal corporate governance procedure and international guidelines, to make donations that are not fully declared. In terms of the activities that we mentioned, we're clearly not using these activities to promote any merchandise. In fact, we're providing money to purchase our food or to supplement our feeding schemes or, in some instances, treatment programs for children.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to believe that the points raised by MassMart, it's based on the legislation in front of us. Certainly, it doesn't seem, from what you are saying also now, in explaining some of the activities that you organize and how it's being done, certainly does not need to have any reason to be concerned, because precisely organized activity relates to promoting a tobacco product or a trademark, etc., you see. So if that's not happening, then certainly Ms. Martin need not have any worries at all, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Madam. I think what Ms. Martin wants to understand is that it's not manufacturing, because it's a retailing wholesale, and but it is selling the product. In the process of selling the product, it is engaging in corporate social responsibility programs, of which part of the profit accrued in the body of Mass Market is the sale of the tobacco product. And they want, therefore, to be satisfied, Honorable Madam, whether in their own understanding and satisfaction, what they will do reading this legislation in front of us will not in the future be interpreted when they do that, saying they are actually engaging in activities that may be subject to ambiguities in their own reading. We here, therefore, must actually look at this, analyze it, and maybe if they've got a particular proposal on their side, look at their proposal, so that the legislation is not subjected to any ambiguous interpretation by people outside in actual implementation of activity. That's why they are here. And you must therefore comment on that particular issue. If you feel that is covered and they are satisfied, we must confirm with them. That's why they are here.
Those are general guidelines by the UN Compact.
Okay. That doesn't allow for anonymous donations. So it clearly causes problems.
Because they may import, you may import tobacco products. Is that a case, am I right?
We can, but we don't.
You can. Okay.
But we don't.
And it says manufacturer or importer. That's what we must clarify ourselves. If you want us, that's why I'm barely helping you. Yeah, but as a wholesaler, they may import the product and then sell it. And then the legislation, no manufacturer or importer. Am I right?
Yeah.
Let's satisfy ourselves with that. Mr. Musafi, you want to help us? Oh, sorry, sir.
I think they are covered, because according to the legislation, a retailer is not mentioned here. It's only the manufacturer and the importer, and yet you are a wholesaler of the product. It's just like, if I can get it right in my mind, the syntax by government, it does many other things, including charitable donations to whatever, according to the budget of government. It uses syntax to improve other people's lives. Is that not true? So you, as a wholesaler selling cigarettes, you are donating to charitable organizations to improve their lives. I don't think there's anything wrong in doing what you are doing. You are doing the right thing.
Honourable members, let me guide you. Honourable member, let me guide you. Can you all go through the definition, Honourable Water? Because I really want us to take this point seriously. It seems as if we're still sort of looking at it very carefully. And you now want the chair to involve the discussion. Let's Let's read the definition of importance. Mathematical guidance there. Means any person who brings or attempts to bring a tobacco product to the Republic for the purpose of selling that product and has a corresponding meaning. That is importing now. It's important. Read that now with that clause earlier on that is actually under question. If you feel it's satisfied, then you stop there.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was going to say, Chair, before you can bring any other thing, you'll have to sort of maybe call for that ethic. Therefore, must match in this case, because they are buying, some sort of buying from the industry. They are a cash and carry in a simple term, a shop. Now they are a cash and carry and they are selling a tobacco product at the end of the day. What does this really mean to them? It means this section is covering them because it says no manufacturer, importer, distributor or retailer. But when you read it with that definition, importer, which says or attempts to bring, it means much is covered on that part.
I mean, our perspective is that we are covered in given the reference to retailer in the section preceding the amendment, and that is therefore our concern. That it's the reference to our retail activities, and albeit that that particular section isn't the subject of an amendment now, when you read the proposed amendments in conjunction with the preceding section, our fear is that we will ultimately be covered and be prevented from being involved in our corporate social investment activities. And it is that we would like clarification on. And I'm hearing from the committee that you believe that there isn't a conflict, and if that is the case, well, then it's a mission accomplished for us.
Yes, it's fine. If you have got other ideas in the process, scribble a note and send it to the chair as to how bad you want to send it.
Thank you, Chair.
Welcoming such views. For now, thank you very much.
Japan Tobacco International South Africa. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. My name is Mike Mavasa. I'm the head of corporate affairs at JT International. Before I start, I wanted to take this opportunity to express our profound appreciation to the committee for this invitation to come and make this presentation to you on the bill. We also want to also record our appreciation to your recent interventions to give us at least enough time to be able to prepare for this particular submission, firstly in terms of our written submissions and also these oral presentations we are making today. So we are grateful for that particular opportunity. So the structure of our presentation is going to cover four areas. The first is obviously just very briefly to tell you about who we are, JT International, particularly our operations here in this country. Secondly, we'll also want to articulate our positions on tobacco legislation broadly. And the presentation will cover three major areas which are of concern to us. First is the consultation process leading to this particular process of the public hearings as we are here today. The second is the vagueness and the wide interpretation of the definition. And I think the previous presentation by MASMAT, it's beginning to clearly demonstrate that there is a little bit of an element of vagueness in terms of our definition. And I think Philip Morris also did the same yesterday. And thirdly, we'll also raise what we consider to be our concerns with regards to overregulation and what we consider to be the dangers of overregulation on a product like a tobacco product. And of course, the last portion would be to indicate what our conclusions are going forward. Chair, JT International has been in operation in South Africa since 1995. We are the third largest international manufacturer of tobacco products around the world. In South Africa, we only hold 7% market share of the industry. We manufacture and distribute 9 internationally recognized brands in this country. We operate in 6 regions around the country, and we also have invested in a factory in Gauteng, which came about as a result of an amalgamation with Gallagher PLC last year, which is a British company which we bought towards the end of last year. In South Africa, we currently and directly employ just over 250 people, including those who are in the factory. And, of course, we are members of the Tobacco Institute of South Africa. Chair, I think I do not claim to be making you wiser with this particular presentation as you have requested. But I think it is important for us to emphasize as the tobacco industry, and particularly as JTI, that tobacco is and remains a legal product in this country. And that's a fact. We all know and accept that with smoking come real risk. It's a fact that we as JTI, we will not even attempt to deny. We also believe that smokers and non-smokers alike should be informed and consistently educated about these particular risks. Because we acknowledge that there are risks, I think we have an obligation to make sure that people are informed and educated about these risks. This is why we believe that government, our civil society, and the industry have an important role to play in communicating these risks. JTI firmly believes, Chair, that this is not a singular responsibility. Yes, government should become the custodians of legislation. yes, they should drive that particular legislation, but it is not government alone that should be given that particular burden to communicate these risks. We are manufacturing these products. Technically, we are supposed to be experts in terms of this particular product, and we expect government to acknowledge that particular responsibility. We also accept, Chair, that the industry should be regulated, considering that these risks associated with tobacco use are there, and they do exist. And I think there is no one that will oppose or is opposed to regulation in whatever form. The manner in which we regulate is an issue that concerns us consistently. We therefore, Chair, support government's primary health objective of reducing the rate of smoking and the health impact of tobacco use. That is our formal and official position as JTI, that we do support government initiative of trying to reduce the rate of smoking and the impact it causes. We also believe that regulation, however, should be developed inclusively and also in consultation with all stakeholders within and also outside of the industry. JTI also, Chair, believes that regulations should be clear and implementable. We are convinced that the legislation that we have before us, together with its amendments, continues to be very unclear. And I'll demonstrate some of that during my presentation. We also believe that reasonable regulation should be informed by sound scientific research and coupled with appropriate consultations or consultation with all affected stakeholders. That is why, Chair, we believe that regulation should also be complemented with responsible public health education and public health campaigns, which would elevate public awareness on the risks of smoking. As a member of the industry, I cannot confidently say South Africa as a country has a vigorous health or public health education or public health campaigns which are designed to educate people about the dangers of smoking. Whether they are done by government, whether they are done by civil society, whether they are done by the industry, I cannot stand here, Chair, confidently and say we are doing that to inform and educate our public in terms of this particular, the dangers of smoking. Therefore, JTI, in principle, Chair, we support the letter and the spirit of the tobacco product control legislation in general and support the national health objective. And that is our official position, and we want to be very clear that we are not contradictory, and we will stand firm with all these particular positions that we have adopted. Now, Chair, that brings me, of course, to the issues around consultation, which naturally impacts to some of the processes that we have seen leading to these particular public hearings today. The manner in which the bill was processed up until now, Chair, for us, and it's our considered opinion that that has been very much unprecedented. The timing from the invitation to comment, which was issued by the committee, to the preparation of the written submissions, right through to the presentation of these particular submissions, was remarkably inadequate. The opportunity of meaningful and robust engagement before the bill is presented before this committee was, as a result, suppressed. It is therefore our respectful submission that our ability to add meaningful value to this important lawmaking process was unduly undermined. Honorable Chair, JTI believes very strongly that there is an untested perception out there that the tobacco industry is arrogant, that it does not cooperate with government when it comes to legislation.
And contrary to this tested, untested perception, the industry is consistently and continuously becoming progressive. And it would like to take its rightful place in this national debate on tobacco control products. We are not asking for favors. We are not asking for a special treatment. What we are saying as JTI and as an industry is for an opportunity to be able to engage government meaningfully in a robust way so that we can collectively and progressively and fundamentally change the prevalence of tobacco footprint and the causes that tobacco brings with it. We accept, Chair, and we have accepted long time ago that we distribute a controversial product. That's a fact. And this particular controversial product comes with associated risks. Equally, we accept as a result that the product should be regulated. And I think the fact that we are here today, we are supporting this particular process, is an indication and also a commitment from us that we also want to see this particular piece of legislation going through. There is no debate on this question. Clear and implementation and implementable regulations are necessary in order to meet our national objective of reducing the incidence of tobacco use in our country. It is our view, Chair, and I think the submissions that were made today and also this morning clearly indicated that indeed there are loopholes in the legislation. The industry will be the first to accept that indeed there are loopholes. But let us understand why these loopholes exist. These loopholes exist primarily because of the fact that the engagement process leading to this process has not been inclusive. You can imagine, Chair, if we were all to sit around the table with the Department of Health coming on board and saying, this is our objective, this is how we want to reduce the incidence of smoking in our country, and so on, how you, as the industry, see this particular process going forward. I doubt, Chair, if the industry will walk away and turn the opposite direction and say, we will not participate in that particular discussion. We've heard yesterday and also this morning that there was a consultation process. I would want to challenge Advocate Lambert, Chair, to present this committee with minutes of the consultation processes that she claims existed with the industry to debate this particular bill. I'm not going to debate either here or there, but I would challenge her to present this committee with the minutes of those particular consultation processes so that the committee can see itself if indeed we have made a contribution, what was that contribution and the level of which that contribution was made. Chair, the industry is asking for a robust debate. We are asking to be part of this national discussion so that we can be able to engage meaningfully and robustly in order for us to be able to come up with solutions to this particular issue. Chair, I must say that the fact that the consultation has been limited respectfully, that also has compromised the ability of this committee to be able to sufficiently consider the submissions before you. It is our considered view, Chair, that if the consultation process was vigorous, was inclusive, there was no need for this committee to be able to sit here and ask questions the manner in which it has been asking in terms of understanding specific clauses line by line. Because those particular discussions, we would have had them before. The industry would have been invited, all affected parties would have been invited. Together with the department, we would have sufficiently debated those particular issues in order to be able to address them so that when the legislation is presented before this committee, the oversight role that the committee needs to exercise is not compromised at all. Chair, we want to improve this bill. There are obviously, as I indicated earlier on, loopholes. And clearly those particular loopholes are there and they will continue to be there. And I think, interestingly, Chair, there was a submission that was made yesterday to say that the industry has taken advantage of the legislation in order to create loopholes. But, Chair, I want to challenge that particular statement and say, if the industry is involved in the drafting of legislation, that gives us an opportunity to take ownership, because that becomes also our legislation. Because currently, as it stands, we see a legislation as an imposition that is given to us that this is what we are going to do and this is what we shall do, without giving us an opportunity to meaningfully engage. We want to take ownership of this legislation. We want to be also say proudly, we participated in this legislation, we also agree with this legislation. This will also create an opportunity as well, Chair, for the industry to self-regulate. Because if we have ownership in the legislation, that gives us an opportunity to be able to look at each other and say, we support this spirit and the letter of this legislation, and therefore, this is our legislation, let us self-regulate. It will also give us an opportunity as Chair, as competitors, because we are competitors in the market, to do peer review, to check whether what is it other competitors are doing. Currently, Chair, we are sitting with a court case where we as JTI have taken our competitor, PAT, to the Competition Commission, primarily because of the fact that we did not agree with some of the behaviors which they were promoting in the market. And we believe very strongly that if we have a legislation that is fully supported, it will capacitate us to be able to make sure that we look at what other competitors are doing in order to make sure that we avoid a situation where we will do things that are contrary to the law. But the opposite is currently happening in the market. If BAT, for an example, introduces something in the market because there's a loophole within the legislation, what we do as competitors is that we look at opportunities of improving the very same thing or the very same loophole that exists in order for us to be able to have a competitive advantage over them, instead of being whistleblowers and saying that what you're doing is contrary to the spirit of the legislation. So we want to believe very strongly, Chair, that the consultation process is an important process for us. It is an important and fundamental issue, which in our view is a cornerstone of this particular piece of legislation. I'm not suggesting for any second, Chair, that with consultation we will come here and look at a completely different bill. We might even look at the very same bill, but the only difference is that we will not be sitting on opposing ends. We will all be saying, this is the bill that we support, this is the bill that we think we should do in order or implement in order for us to be able to reach the public health objectives. You can imagine, Chair, that I think there were also arguments that were made yesterday that we are, South Africa as a country, we are leaders and we are setting the trend. You can imagine, Chair, the impact that we could make as South Africa, if come the conference of the parties in November, we were to stand together, government, civil society, and the industry, to say South Africa is pushing to limit the incidence of tobacco as a collective, speaking in one voice, in a unified manner, the impact that that gesture will make. I think, in our view, Chair, that would be a more stronger voice as opposed to the notion that it is currently being pushed. So, Chair, I think on the consultation process, I want to also take this opportunity to challenge my very own DG of Health to say that, Comrade Tami, through you, Chair, we want you to consult with us, engage with us in a robust manner so that we can be able to debate this particular bill and come back to this particular committee and say, yes, we had our fights, yes, we had our debates, but this is what we have agreed on, and we are proud to present a bill that we would like this multi-party committee to consider. So I want to leave this point here with that particular challenge to my own DG on this particular issue. Chair, the second issue that we wanted to raise is in relation to the vagueness and the wideness of the definitions. And I'm not going to take a lot of time in discussing these, because I think a lot of discussions has already ensued, and we've had discussions yesterday in this particular regard. There is no doubt, Chair, the definition of advertising and promotion is very broad, and it amounts to unconstitutional infringement on our right to freedom of expression. It further prohibits normal communication through any direct or indirect means. The bill in its current form suggests in clause 3, subsection 1, that any commercial communication or action brought to the notice of any member of the public in a manner with the aim, effect, or likely effect of promoting the sale of or use of any tobacco product or creating any awareness of tobacco product, brand element, and also tobacco manufacturer. We believe very strongly, the Chair, that this particular definition in its current form, and I must say that and admit that perhaps for the purpose of this presentation, I did not extrapolate the entire definition, obviously in the interest of time and also for the purposes of the presentation. But I think in our submission we've made a point that we believe very strongly that this particular definition should be reconsidered by the committee. And I think we've made some suggestions on our submission. Secondly, the definition on brand element, equally, this definition is also broad because it does not comply with the principle of the rule of law, which provides that laws, particularly laws which create a criminal offense, must be formulated in a sufficiently clear manner so that those who are regulated by them know what is and what is not prohibited by law. So because that particular provision and definition is very broad, I think it creates some different interpretation to this particular legislation. And also our concern is that it will also perpetuate the notion of creating further loopholes in the current legislation as presented. Also, the issue of promotion, Chair, our most fundamental concern with this definition is that it is not confined to promotions aimed at the public. The effect of this is that promotions simply fostering awareness and positive attitudes towards a tobacco product or a manufacturer aim at wholesalers and retailers with whom a tobacco manufacturer trades will be prohibited. And I think largely Philip Morris also raised this point yesterday that the definition suggests that if, for an example, we issue a business card or a letterhead, we will be breaking the law. So we suggest respectfully, Chair, that this particular definition also should be revisited. Chair, on over-regulation, I'm just going to run very quickly to say that we are obviously concerned about the issue on charitable financial contribution. We believe very strongly that the fact that the bill is proposing that we should make our contributions anonymously is actually over-regulating the industry unnecessarily. Currently, JTI, for an example, Chair, we do not make charitable financial contributions directly to the beneficiaries. We do that through non-governmental organizations that we work with. And it is currently unclear that if, for an example, we are to make a contribution to those particular NGOs, should we also do that anonymously, because we do not necessarily benefit directly. That is the work of the NGO to go out and be able to publicize whatever they need to, without even mentioning that the monies or the contribution that they have received were actually from JTI or from the industry. The displays at wholesalers, the bill should not provide for regulations to prescribe the manner in which tobacco products may be displayed at wholesalers' level, as the display of such products does not necessarily impact on tobacco consumption. So we also suggesting, Chair, that this particular provision should also be revisited by the committee. The point of sale signage, the bill should clearly specify that retailers may place the signs of point of sale, and we are also requesting the committee to retain the current provision of point of sale as in the current Act, not necessarily as proposed by the bill. And the sale of tobacco products at academic institutions, Chair, we are also requesting the committee to also review this particular provision because it begins to suggest that if I'm a student at UCT Business School as an adult, I cannot be able to smoke at business school because at business schools, for an example, they are not under 18. You have to obviously qualify and then graduate your up until you get to your post-grad and so on. So if I'm sitting at VET Business School or any other academic institution, because currently if you read the legislation, it says all academic institutions, irrespective. So our submission is that it should make provision that only those institutions where you're under 18 are present, for example, your schools and so on and so forth, but not a blanket academic institution as it is currently proposing. We also concerned about the organized activity or event. The inclusion of this phase, Chair, also suggests that if I organize an event in my own home, I may be out of bounds with the law, particularly when I invite people who are smokers. So I think also because of the vagueness of this particular definition and provision, we would want the committee to also carefully relook at this particular provision so that it does not create a different interpretation. Our view is that it must have a very clear, consistent, and one message that should be able to send a very clear message to all those it is intended to. Chair, let me conclude our submission by saying that we believe very strongly that our constitution demands that stakeholder consultation with regards to the drafting and the passing of legislation should be observed. As I indicated when I opened in my opening remarks, that we are very grateful to the committee for giving us this opportunity in terms of the passing of the legislation. Our concern is on the drafting of the legislation, and we would want to appeal through the committee that these two processes are interlinked and they are fundamentally and equally important, and we would want to have engagement on both processes. The consultation process has been ignored, and the period for comment before the committee was remarkably short, given the nature of the proposed changes to the legislation, because these changes will have implications not only to the industry, but generally speaking to also those who have taken up this particular habit of smoking. Certain provisions of the bill have no public health impact at all, and we want to have a debate around those particular provisions to see how we can be able to strengthen those. And I think also, Chair, our observation is that because the bill makes reference to the fact that the Minister of Health will regulate certain aspects, it also creates reading this bill a difficulty, because we do not know the portions and how those particular portions of the legislation will be regulated by the Minister, because obviously this legislation is not presented simultaneously with those particular regulations. So currently, it is a bit confusing, unclear, and then also very difficult to comment meaningfully, because it makes reference very consistently to the fact that the Minister will regulate certain provisions. We believe that through the meaningful consultative process, we can work effectively with our government to address the tobacco-related health concerns, and that together we can arrive at workable legislation. And therefore, Chair, we respectfully recommend to the committee that this legislation be returned to the department, and that the department consult meaningfully with the industry and all affected stakeholders so that we can be able to come back to the committee with a more strengthened and solidified discussion and bill before you. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mabasa. I think your presentation has been very helpful, I must say, quite directed and focused. It's up to us now to interact with your submission. Thank you very much, Reggie, for your submission. Members, comments?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like some clarity on an issue on where you said ownership of the legislation. I'm not going to talk about whether there was consultation or no consultation. I'm not going to talk about it because as you're presenting right now, I believe this is the level at which your contributions to this portfolio committee with in relation to the amendment bill is expected. And when you say ownership of the legislation, you remind me of what the advocate said earlier about, I don't know whether it was Mexico or what. So how far do you want to be involved in the drafting of the legislation? Because there should be some regulation between business and the legislation. And when you say you want to go in one fourth out there and say, this is our product, I don't think that is how it should happen. I don't know, but maybe I need some clarity when you said your ownership of the legislation. I'm not talking about the level of consultation. And at the universities, that's the age limit that people should be allowed to buy. Can those people go buy cigarettes from the shops and keep them in their pockets and smoke at their smoke-free areas at the universities? That's just what I'm asking. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The presenter mentioned that there's been legal advice regarding advertising and that it's unconstitutional. You mentioned that about banning advertising. One of the previous presenters said they've also had advice that it's unconstitutional. So could you just elaborate on that one? This is giving conflicting advice there. And also about your consultation, briefly, could you give us an idea of how many times you were consulted? And also, did you approach the department and were they not interested in meeting with you, or was it vice versa? Give us some background on that. And as far as anonymous donations are concerned, I mean, it's, you were concerned about organizing activities. You said if you had a party at your own house and people spoke, it might be misconstrued as transcript. But if you read the definition, it says here under organized activity B, excludes any event arranged by manufacturer, importer, distributor, retailer of tobacco products where only its shareholders, employees, or the spouses or partners attend. But for his friends, wouldn't fall in that category. Are you not exaggerating the impact of the definition when you say that? I mean, it does seem a bit ludicrous in the way that department in the camp down here having a pot, at your home. That's all the questions I have.
I want to thank Mr. Mabasa for his very concise submission. However, I want to raise a few questions. The one relates to the origins of the bill. The bill clearly, as the department has previously indicated, comes back since 2003, and we are now, this whole process is literally 5 years old. I'm quite sure in 2006, when we had public hearings, the industry were an integral part of that public hearings, and indeed they came prepared to make submissions, which they in essence did. The only thing we've done was to split the bill at that time. So clearly, one has a little bit of a difficulty in understanding and accepting the notion that you are saying that this bill has been hastily crafted and it's literally springing upon the industry, not giving the industry sufficient time to do. In actual fact, our chairperson has in March already extended the notice period. In actual fact, the dates that was originally set down for a public hearing has been extended in by and large to accommodate the industry and the public in general. So clearly from the committee side, we indeed, through the chairperson, has gone a long way in trying to accommodate you. So one is a little bit concerned with regard to that. You, in your presentation, you spoke about the risk of a tobacco smoke on the health. You also indicate very clearly what the responsibilities of government are in relation to the Constitution. Must protect the health of the citizens, and you commit yourself as a player in the industry to take our government's hands. Our task here as a portfolio committee is essentially to look at the legislation to make sure that there is sufficient input from yourself and the public in general before we pass this legislation, because we are legislators. That is our main task, and all legislation that we pass must stand the test of our constitution. So clearly it has to be in line. So when we pass a legislation, it has to promote and protect the health, general health of the people. Yeah. Thirdly, you mentioned the issue of the vagueness of the definitions, but yet you did not indicate with the exception. I think is it brand element, where you mentioned in your presentation, your written submission, your concern with the word includes. You would prefer include not to be there, you see, because you indicate it somehow creates the impression that there may be additional things that are not there, but you did not indicate clearly in terms of the other definitions, how you would want to suggest it should be formulated, so that we as a committee can look at your proposals when we looked at the consider the legislation clause by clause. But I'm also very happy that you in your oral submission refers to the dangerousness of the usage of tobacco. I think we are at one with that. It's not only a risk, but it is a danger. And we are happy that we agree to that. We also realize, I mean, clearly this is a legal product, and we do not want to declare, that bill will not, our intention is not to declare the use of tobacco as an illegal product. We want to curb the use of it to promote a healthy South Africa. Your concerns with the powers of the minister to make regulations. Clearly, the current legislation affords the minister powers to regulate. You did not indicate whether you have a problem with regard to that, but you are saying that the powers as envisaged in this act is a problem, because this bill just intends to extend the powers that the minister already have. So if you are able to respond to those queries, I will be very happy. Thank you very much.
Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to respond, and thanks very much to members as well. On the ownership of legislation, Chair, I think perhaps I want to take advantage of the fact that, and perhaps maybe try and illustrate this point in a different way by using my own experience, also as a former bureaucrat. I remember when I was still working within government, as the advisor and also spokesperson for the late Comrade Dalla Omar, we had a situation, Honourable Member, where legislation was presented. And I'll give you an example of a very also fairly and also in inverted commas, controversial, that is in the past, at the time while I was still in the department, industry, which is the taxi industry. I think when I speak about ownership, we did not like, I mean, we know obviously all of us the history of the taxi industry, which was ridden by violence and so on and so forth. But the reality of the matter, and one of the things that the late minister requested us to do without fail, is to engage with the industry when we drafted any legislation that affects that particular industry. Whether we liked the fact that some of the taxi owners came to the meetings with guns or not, the reality of the matter is that we consulted with them to say that we have a taxi recap that you want to put on the table. It will affect your livelihood. It will affect the way you deal with the industry and so on and so forth. And the taxi industry was consulted extensively. And as a result, you had a situation where there was support from that particular industry as a result of that particular consultation process. We are quite convinced, Chair, that if we are coming up with a legislation similar to what we are looking at before this House, the imperative is to obviously look at the legislation so that it can be able to give us an opportunity to say, what is this legislation, what is the impact of this legislation to the industry? What are the timelines are we looking at in terms of making sure that this industry is able to comply with what we are suggesting? What are the financial implications, not only for the state, for the industry, for civil society, and so on and so forth? And when I say ownership, honorable member, I'm saying we were disempowered to participate meaningfully through that particular process. To say, if, for an example, we are discussing issues around charitable donations, we would have preferred, as JTI, an opportunity where we don't come to this House and object the merits and the demerits of how charitable donations should be made, when and how. We would have preferred a situation where a presentation would have been made to say that this is how we want charitable donations to be governed and to be managed by the industry. And for the industry to say, yes, we support, or yes, we support, however, we have the following concerns, which were discussed with the department, and we were able to come to some sort of an agreement in relation to how we see those particular. Any form of legislation, Chair, has implications. Whether it has implications, whether financially, administratively, or otherwise, it has implications to the state, it has implications to us. We speak of, for example, law enforcement. This piece of legislation has huge law enforcement implications. In terms of how we are going to enforce this bill or this piece of legislation becomes a huge question mark. When I speak of ownership, I'm saying that burden Philippians is going to be retained or not. We don't want any law enforcement agency to be policing whether in organized activities people are smoking or not, and so on and so forth. That is what we do not want to see. We would want to see a situation where we can promote self-regulation, and I think that is why, in that spirit, we're saying if we were contacted, and meaningfully so, we would have had an opportunity to be able to debate quite extensively on that particular question. Honorable Waters, the banning of advertising is a contentious issue. Yes, we took legal advice on this particular question, and we are convinced that we can be able to have a constitutional challenge. There is, I'm sure you're aware, that there's legal precedent in relation to this particular question in Canada. And I'm not going to speak about the merits and the demerits of that particular court case specifically, but we believe very strongly that, to a large extent, the current legislation as it stands, suggesting a total ban in its current form, does open for potential. I'm not suggesting that JTI will be mounting a constitutional challenge, but I'm saying, as a presentation to this committee, it does open for those particular possibilities, particularly in view of the fact that there is legal precedent in this particular regard. And obviously, that particular legal precedent also has given us some indications, and I think to a large extent South Africa is more or less taking more or less the very same approach that Canadian authorities have taken. And I think if you read that particular judgment very carefully, you would see that the grounds for us to be able to consider mounting constitutional challenges are very sound. Because clearly, the legislation in its current form, Chair, completely takes away our right as manufacturing companies to communicate in any form or shape with our consumers. We are producing a product, and we are acknowledging that that particular product has risks. And we say we want to be able to communicate those particular risks to consumers. And I think it is within those particular bases that we believe very strongly that the definition in its current form could expose for some constitutional challenges. On the consultation and how many times and so on, Chair, through you, I think, Honorable Waters, you are aware that the industry is organized through the Tobacco Institute of South Africa, of course with an exception of other colleagues who chose not to be represented through TISA. And through that particular structure, we have made numerous attempts to engage the department to be able to sit down and debate this particular bill in a manner that we can be able to come to some form of an agreement in relation to how this bill should be implemented and debated and so on. So there is documented proof, and I think that I would want to, the fact that my colleague, Francois from TISA, will be making a presentation later on, perhaps maybe I would want him to, because he was representing and continues to represent all of us in terms of consultations, but to also indicate that as recent as the 16th of November, if I'm not mistaken, we have also a confirmed meeting with a department which was cancelled at the last minute as another attempt to be able to engage on this particular piece of legislation. Yes, we accept that, Honourable Member, that the universities, people can buy their tobacco products anywhere. It's the same debate, for an example, as you have at our airport, where people can't necessarily smoke at the airport. But what we're saying is that it really over-regulates. I think that the point that we have raised on this particular issue is on over-regulation, that you can be able to, particularly because you know that in this particular establishment, you do not have necessarily your target people that you do not necessarily want to be exposed to the product, why would you want to then limit the accessibility of the product in those particular establishments purely on the basis that it is an academic institution? For us, it makes no difference, because it will not contribute directly to the objective of reducing the incidence of smoking, because those people do smoke anyway. So why would you want to limit accessibility, because all of them are over 18 and so on? On the organized activity, Honorable Waters, again, I think, yes, the legislation in its current form is very vague and very broad. And obviously there are different interpretations in relation to that, because we are saying, and if you read this particular legislation, our own interpretation at the very least is that if I associate with any person, as long as that person is not an employee of JTR, I may be perceived to be promoting or giving or promoting a tobacco product. Because the legislation in its current form, it says only people that are associated with JTR, whether it's our employees, our shareholders, our spouses, and so on. If I do anything outside that realm, that person is regarded as a public, as a member of the public. And if we expose such people, it obviously begins to open up for different interpretation. And I think that is an area that we want to see tightened, so that that particular definition is more clearer and it does not doesn't cause further confusion. Honourable Madel, I think the origins of the bill, it is very clear, and I'm not going to disagree with you in terms of where the bill comes from and where we are and so on. I think the point we're raising as JTR is that we do not want to come back here again, Chair, in 2 years' time to deal with another amendment. The principal bill was passed in 1993. We came here in 1999 to make an amendment to that principal bill. We came back again in 2003, where we decided to split the bill because we wanted to amend the amendment of 1999. Last year, we have passed, subject to the president's signing, we've passed Section 75 of the split. Today, we are considering the version which is Section 76. So we are amending the amended bill or act. And we're saying we do not want to come here again in 2 years' time to amend again the amendment of the amended act of 1993. And we believe very strongly that we can avoid that if we collectively, the industry, government, civil society, sit together and debate and say, yes, there are loopholes. Chair, I would hate to have a situation where the industry goes back and brainstorms new loopholes and say, this bill has been passed, how do we circumvent this new bill? Because it will then propel the department to come back again and amend further loopholes. So that is what we are trying to avoid. We are saying, we also as an industry, Chair, it is not in our best interest. We are also running, and I think that point has been eloquently made, we are running businesses. And if you run a business and that business is going to be subjected to continuous amendments, new legislation, it has financial implications for us as well as a business, because we need to adapt new changes from time to time. We want to put this particular piece of legislation to bed and get on with the business of implementing it and making sure that we self-regulate, we support it wholeheartedly, and be able to make sure that it is fully implemented. I agree that I have not perhaps maybe Honorable Madela expanded authoritatively on the other definitions. And I did that deliberately because we've actually made that expansion on our written submissions. What I attempted to do was just to highlight those areas in our written submissions where we feel that the committee should look at, with obviously an assumption, Honourable Member, that you will obviously have an opportunity, as we've presented before you, our written submissions, to be able to go into more detail and capacitate you to be able to see what our views are on those particular other definitions. On the minister to regulate, I agree. The minister has an executive power to regulate. However, our concern with these particular powers that we are conferring on the minister with this draft or with this bill, I'll give an example in terms of point of sale. We're saying that the minister should regulate point of sale. The minister can come back in her regulation and say point of sale is going to be the size of a business card. She has the power to do that because the legislation in its current form empowers her to regulate. How she's going to regulate in terms of size, colors, brand elements, and so on and so on, it's only our educated guess, as my colleagues from PMI did yesterday, to say that they are proposing that it should be 1 meter. If it is not, or if it is less than 1 meter, they are proposing more signs. But the power currently conferred to the minister in the bill, in its current form, says the minister can regulate. And obviously, we do not want to come back and cry foul and say, yes, but we were under the impression that the minister would not be as harsh as she decided to go in relation to, for an example, point of sale. I think that is how, and that's where we have concerns in relation to the powers for the minister to regulate. We're not necessarily questioning those powers. We accept that she does have those powers, and we support that. Thank you, Jen.
Time is our enemy. Honourable members, may I make a request? For now, let's not deal with the issues around the consultation, etc. Maybe follow up, I think, the point the Honourable Waters raised yesterday. When the department makes a submission, let's look at that and maybe satisfy ourselves once and for all. Remembering that in March, when we first had this bill, there was a letter from TISA, which was circulated to us. In return, the Department of Health circulated its own response around this particular issue. I still have to prick my memory whether we adequately exhausted our own view as a committee in terms of the submission regarding terms of the consultation. But I really want us to pack it for now because it's going to. It's important because in terms of the processes of Parliament, before a bill comes to us, the stakeholders must be consulted. If they're both the anti and the pro, any other person, the stakeholders must be consulted. And if there's a view that they're not being consulted, let's entertain it and look at it. Let's take that maybe on Tuesday, we set a Tuesday, let's deal with that. And in terms of the portfolio committee, we recognize this particular weakness, that we ourselves were not giving, from our own objective role now and subjective role as a portfolio committee, we recognize this particular weakness. And thus we took a collective decision as a portfolio committee member that let's extend the advertising period. And then having extended the advertising period, we again evaluated ourselves and we again agreed that we may not have been exhaustive given the number of submissions and the telephone calls that were complaining to the committee section and to the chairperson. And thus we agreed again to extend the advertising period until about the month of April. I think subsequent periods are out of that. In almost all the major newspapers, we can provide the records if required in terms of that. Out of which we decided to meet yesterday. So we attempted, it may not have been adequate, but in our own limited resources and time, we attempted to do so. But let's look at it that way. I really want to plead to the members of this portfolio committee. Let's pack it now and not really put it as a focus. In our own understanding, and as a bond, we also raised them, and I think as we're going to deal with this, we are of the view that if there was a bill, Section 75, presented to us last year, consultation should have taken place in as far as that bill was concerned. If there's this new one, Section 76, consultation should take place. Because we debated ourselves here the wisdom of the separation. We're not satisfied about the wisdom of separation. However, we consented to the wisdom of separation, and therefore we agreed to that. But we'll have to satisfy ourselves in terms of some of those areas there. I therefore want to invite us, let's focus now and narrow ourselves, if you allow us, Mr. Mabas, more to the content of your submission in this regard. And maybe the opening shot in this regard will be some of the areas you are raising about advertising. Let's just break it and deal with it, the whole aspect of advertising, so that when we have another view, hopefully yourself on Tuesday, when the department and this, we said by the end of the day, Mitchell, we must get this legal advice. No. We said today.
No, today, when you said you finish at 7, you said that.
We must therefore get this particular comment around this particular issue. But there are various comments that have been made around this particular submission. Philip Morris yesterday made a particular view around this submission, and more or less what it was saying. Philip Morris was saying this definition should expressly exclude communication with the trade or sellers and retailers, and should be compliant with the competition legislation. And that's what it says, and they made a particular view that in their own view that even an issuance of a business card may be construed as advertising. The University of Cape Town advocated that in fact to make things easier for all of us, let's completely ban all advertising. And therefore there will be no headaches on our side whether we have to look into the nooks and crannies of the legalities of each respective area. The advocate Patricia Lambert's submission first quoted from the FTCT, am I right? And then it says the parties should enact a comprehensive ban on all tobacco advertising, promotion, and sponsorship. I'm not sure they left other areas which are included being deliberately or by inference. That's what the submission from advocate Patricia Lambert. Comprehensive ban on all tobacco advertising, promotion, and sponsorship. That's what it is said. The bill presents other broader areas of this particular issue on advertising. Somewhere in the submission of advocate Lambert, that it suggested that we should ban advertising in all its forms. That's the word that was used. And I think let's also bear that in mind. And then there are these views from now the JTI that are also saying more or less the question of a prohibition of advertising and promotion is very broad and amounts to be unconstitutional. It prohibits formal communication through any direct and indirect means. I'm not sure, again, that has not really been explained. What do you mean by direct and indirect means? And therefore, we recommend that this particular provision should be amended. And in the written submission, not now the slide presentation, I'm not sure if the way it's put, it's quite a long one. But somewhere it says the comprehensive ban on advertising and promotion greatly interferes with the ability of the tobacco manufacturers to distinguish their brands and thus to engage in open competition. More or less along the same lines as Philip Morris. Again, they then say it restricts our ability to communicate with existing smokers of products in relation to, among others, product development, new products, etc. Of course, I must ask myself the question, why must we communicate with the existing smokers, because we must take people out of smoking completely. But again, they are making this particular view and what they call the risk, reduced risk products and other distinguished features of particular tobacco products.
again, I don't know that. And as well as the market share by making consumers aware of the brand. So this is some of the views that are there. It's quite a longish presentation. They are making even some of the views there from the examples from Canada and other authors around this legislation. I would invite members to just comment on this specific thing. That way we'll be more systematic in dealing with things. It's going to arm us, especially from the responses to come when we deal in delivering with this budget. Honorable Dudley?
Yes. Thank you. Sorry, I was smiling earlier because this was such a difficult thing for you to argue. I was trying to visualize you in consultation pointing out the loopholes, and it just kind of didn't work. Basically, you start off by saying that you agree, we accept that the industry should be regulated, and we support government's primary health objectives in reducing the rate of smoking and health impact on tobacco use. And so I wanted to sort of ask you, the suggestion that came up in the presentation, our last presentation yesterday, was that it would help clearly to reduce the smoking and the impact if point of sale didn't exist, if it was basically in a bottom drawer, like pornography, because if you have a look at the pornography, somebody who may not have had pornography on their mind suddenly does. And a similar sort of thing, which I think. So how would you respond to the bottom drawer thing? Because obviously your smokers will know what they smoke. They'll know they want a cigarette, so they'll come into the shop and they'll ask for it. So you're obviously arguing for the signage at point of sale. If that's not to increase your sales, what is it for? Yeah, so that would be my question there. Then you're speaking about the definition of promotion, and you're saying that it could be aimed at wholesalers and retailers with whom a tobacco manufacturer trades, and that would be prohibited. So would that help then to specifically exclude wholesalers and retailers? Would that be a solution, or is it something broader that we're not seeing? Likewise, I was that the whole issue around the sponsorships and contributions being anonymous. I need to go back now and look at whatever you suggested there, because my thought, and this question would probably be to the department as well as to yourself, what would the implications be if it wasn't anonymous but there was no public acknowledgement allowed? Would that make it better for you? And then from the department side, I would want to know, how would that affect whatever issues they're seeing there? And then again, I over the organized activity, I would go and look at your recommendation there, because, of course, we wouldn't mind if you're not encouraging your friends to smoke, but it would be good to see what kind of wording is recommended in that situation, because we obviously don't want to be ridiculous. But at the same time, we can see a clear loophole there in terms of regular every day of the week or every week kind of activities going on. So, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Member, I think on the point of sale, our view is that obviously currently in South Africa, point of sale is the only form that remains available to the industry in terms of exposure or exposing our brands. And I think the Chair has touched on some of the issues for us there in relation to issues around point of sale. Firstly being that I think if we were to put products under the counter, it would obviously largely, because look, I think the reality of the matter is that we have other smokers who have decided to take up the habit, some of whom are very loyal to their brands and some of whom who are not. Now, if we were to take all the products under the counter, it limits the ability of those who are not loyal to their brands to be able to choose. So the right to choose of consumers is adversely affected as a result of putting all the brands under the counter, because JTI may introduce a new brand, and because it is under the counter, that particular smoker may not be in a position to have a choice to switch onto that new brand because he's not even aware that there's a new brand. So our view is that if you have point of sale and also you display those particular products as we currently do, you obviously have that particular situation where those smokers who have decided to take up the habit can be able to exercise their right to choose. The second issue for us is obviously the issue around market share. And I think as it has been eloquently debated earlier on, our colleagues at BAT, they occupy a sizable market share in this country. And we would want to obviously compete, and we will continuously make sure that we compete in a manner that it is fair and it allows us to be able to give us an opportunity to ensure that customers and existing smokers can be able to actually see that other than the brands that are distributed by our main competitor, there is actually an alternative. And I think that will obviously assist us in that particular regard. So I think for us, point of sale is our only existing opportunity to be able to get equity for our brands. On the definition of promotion, yes, I agree with you that the current definition, obviously, as I indicated earlier on, is subject to a number of interpretations. And we would obviously be very comfortable if, amongst other things, exclusion in relation to wholesalers and retailers is considered. Because in our view, the fact that JTI will be, for an example, let's take for an example our packaging. If we package, for an example, our products and send it to Massmart or any of our wholesalers, that may also be seen as promoting our product, the manner in which we've packaged our products. So it would be very helpful, because the definition in its current form says everything that may promote the product may be seen. So it also includes packaging. Your normal master case that you ship or send to a wholesaler might be perceived as promotion. So those are some of the vagueness and the whiteness in terms of definitions. And I think Philip Morris showed us, for an example, an empty or a box which did not have any markings on yesterday in their presentation. So yes, I think it would, as part of assisting this debate, it would assist if exclusions were given to wholesalers and retailers. In terms of contributions, anonymous contributions, as I indicated earlier on, I don't know how, obviously, my colleagues in other companies administer their contributions, but for JTI, for an example, we've been doing research recently, as recent as 2 months ago, where we want to participate, for an example, in a project where we will promote mobile libraries, particularly in rural areas, where we will have vehicles which are going to have books in them, going to different rural areas. On the first day, it will go somewhere in a corner of Lusikisiki in the Eastern Cape, and then it will go around that particular region. On a Wednesday, it is at a particular corner and so on. On next week, Thursday, it goes back to the Lusikisiki so that those people who borrowed books on that Thursday, they know I can read this book for a week, next week return it, and then borrow another one and so on and so forth. And in that particular program, for an example, we're not promoting any tobacco use. We're not even branding vehicles saying JTI. We're not even distributing books with tobacco or anything. It's books, normal books that can people can be able to access and so on. And that particular project is also not done. We do not intend doing that project directly at JTI. We want to do that project via an NGO. We bring in an NGO and say, this is what we want to do and contribute to this particular program to be able to benefit those rural communities. As far as we are aware, and as far as our planning is concerned, there is no way where we seek, for an example, public acknowledgement for that particular contribution. We're giving that contribution, we're assisting the NGO with all it requires in order to make sure that that particular project gets off the ground and so on. We are all excited about 2010 in this country. Equally, tobacco industries are also excited about 2010. What we are doing, and we are proposing, for an example, to do, is to look at possibilities of going into some of the areas and promote, for an example, a situation where we can bring in your artists, because we have been approached by artists who say they would want to paint, for an example, walls with soccer images and so on. And we are not saying, and also that particular project, we're doing it through an NGO. And we're saying we will provide paint, we'll provide transport and so on, for those particular artists to be able to articulate their artistic skills and paint. And we wanted to term, for an example, that project, painting the town green. And we're not suggesting, for an example, that we want any public acknowledgement. On those particular murals, you will not even see any of our brands, including our name, SJTI, on those particular murals. It will be done through an NGO, and we can be able to make sure that we make our own contribution in making those particular local areas beautiful as we welcome our international visitors through 2010. So there are many other projects that we're looking at, and none of the projects, and I speak for JTI here, that none of those particular projects, we are seeking any public acknowledgement from them, because we also understand the fact that obviously it will open us to unnecessary and undue criticism at different levels and so on. So it is for that reason that we have taken an approach that we will do this in collaboration and with our non-governmental organizations that we want to work with. Thank you.
If one of the members can allow me, sir, I don't want to take any more time. It's 1:05 now, Marek. We going to lunch. He said we just go out and then we just cross the catwalk here outside. Then we join the other people on that other side. We'll try to get the committee people to direct us. Let's go to lunch there, then we'll come back. Why don't we try at all best to be here at 1:01, and maybe take another 10 minutes on this submission, and then take forward other submissions. Agreed?
Yeah.
Agreed?
Sure.
30 minutes, bro. 30 minutes for us.